Welcome, welcome. Happy Hour with DJ Gen X. And this is a special episode. People, if you're listening, today is my birthday. So I am very excited to be celebrating with you guys. And well, it's my birthday weekend. It's actually tomorrow. But, you know, during this weekend, I've had a lot of time to reflect on the past and everything, because also we're in quarantine. This will be my first birthday in quarantine that I've never gone out to celebrate, but I'm certainly not going to not celebrate. I'm going to do that with you guys. And so what I wanted to do my show about was a little bit about what I've discovered as I've been going through my garage and finding these little treasures. So I just felt I had to do this show for a lot of reasons, but for one, it's because of what I've been reflecting on. And I kind of want to go back and take this opportunity to give some respect to a little girl that I forgot about a long time ago. And like I said, I found a diary from 1987, 88. So I was in seventh and eighth grade. And I sat down and I sure had a lot of laughs this week. I've been howling, laughing. It's been hilarious. But it's also, there have been some tragic things that I've come across, and in particular, things that I wrote, you know, in my diary at that time that were happening in my life that, you know, were big deals. But I also learned really at an early age, like so many, I think I speak for so many females, that things that happen to us, we kind of, and they're so painful, we just compartmentalize them or put them aside. And I think when you do that a lot over the years, they get lost. You know, those memories kind of, oh, maybe you'd think, oh, it wasn't that bad, or maybe it didn't happen the way you remember it, you know. And I did a lot of second guessing. But by coming across these memories and these journals, I have found some unreal memories. And like I said, not all good. So, but a lot of great ones. But one of the things I did come across was I recorded in my journal. And now let's say this time I must have been about a sophomore in high school. And I grew up here in San Francisco. I went to an all-girls Catholic school, but I really became quite rebellious early on and did a lot of, you know, partying and going out and trying to push the limits. And so as a young girl, I put myself in some really kind of weird situations. I think that I found myself in situations and then I'd get myself in some trouble and I wouldn't know how to get out or how to ask for help or how to tell anybody that I was doing, you know, that I was at a party, for instance, with boys. Nonetheless, there was alcohol and really inappropriate things going on, right? I mean, I was doing what every other kid my age was doing, at least at that time, kind of in that group of people, if that makes sense. So, but like I said, as I'm getting older, I put that aside. I put it aside and I found it in this box. And what I found is things I wrote about what happened to me. So these are things that, like, we would have these house parties. And I grew up in a pretty affluent area in San Francisco. And most of the houses, I mean, we called them houses, but most of them are pretty unbelievable pieces of property. If you've driven through San Francisco, you might know what I'm talking about. And so I grew up in the Presidio Heights, Pacific Heights neighborhood, and we would go to these outrageous house parties where there was very little, if none, like parental supervision at all. Most people had kind of the run of either a house here and or a house somewhere else, maybe a summer house in Sonoma or a Stinson Beach house. But anyway, to make a crazy long story short, there was a lot of activity and there was an abundance to a lot of stuff that I look back and now I'm a parent. I'm a student now at Dominican, but I'm also an older student and I've had two children and they're getting older. And now I'm looking back here as a whole different person and thinking to myself, wow, I really did go through a lot of things that I kind of just ignored. And, you know, it made me start to think about what I went back to school at 42 years old after a career in real estate. And I decided I wanted to go into psychology because I guess because of all the experience I went through. I didn't go to college right out the bat, out of the gate. I went to where I grew up. Like I said, it was almost unheard of not to go straight to college. Like, it was a big deal where you went to college. You either went to an Ivy League, or you went to a UC, or you went to a small liberal arts school in the Upper West Side or whatever. You know, it was just everybody went. And I know my parents were devastated when I just was like, yeah, I'm not going. And I really, I carried that around for my whole life, until my older son, who's now 22 years old, he'll be graduating from college in about a week and a half. When he went to college 4 years ago, I decided, you know what, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to give myself another chance. And I did. And I went back to school. I went back to community college and did there 2 years. And it was amazing. It was a completely different experience. And I then transferred and was lucky enough to become a Penguin and then come to Dominican University. So to make a long story short, as I was going through my journals and seeing all these things that had happened to me that I had actually written down, like sexual assaults and, experiences where I didn't think much of it because it happened so often in our, it was really common. And I started to talk as I got older and, got into my 30s and then even into my 40s, and the walls started to come down a little bit more around the people that I grew up with, who I'm fortunate enough to have in my life still, quite a few of them. We started talking and we started to share stories and we started to relive these memories. And I would almost be like, did this really happen? Like, was there a time and I have friends that are like, yes, that really happened. It also happened to us, or this happened, and really unreal things. So a couple years ago, I'm sure you guys probably maybe remember, hopefully people know who Brett Kavanaugh is. He was in the news. He was a big, he was somebody that President Trump nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court in 2018. So he was nominated by President Trump. That should be all I should say about that. But there's so much more to it. And I wanted to talk about him for just a second because it's an example of kind of what I found in my journal to be true. And what I found from speaking to other women who not only just grew up around me, but like women throughout my life, like all over, have been sexually assaulted or put in a really horrible position and not know how to speak about it or get help, or maybe they, like I did for so many years, compartmentalize it and like, oh, well, A, maybe it wasn't that bad, and B, you shouldn't have been doing what you were doing to begin with. Had I gone to the nuns at my Catholic school or my parents at that point, at 15, 16, 17, and said, I've gotten in trouble. And of course, then the next question would be, well, what were you doing? Where were you? And then I'd have to let them know that I was doing inappropriate things, like, going to house parties and frat parties, and there were beach bond parties, and then there were, you just name it, college parties. I remember it was a big deal when we were in high school. There were college, there was just across from UC Berkeley. And we would have friends that were a couple years older and they'd start doing their college parties. So college parties were big. And then raves and doing warehouse crazy parties where there were a lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol, and certainly a lot of sex. And not all of it was consensual. So back to Brett Kavanaugh, when this all came out a couple years ago, I was almost, I relived a lot of what I experienced, and watching this on TV and watching him go through what he went through. Basically, he was nominated by President Trump, like I said, and then he had a former classmate from many, many years ago when he was in high school come out of the woodworks as he was being kind of brought into the Supreme Court, or he was being nominated. And she kind of uncovered what kind of guy this guy really was. Yeah, sure. But he was absolutely absolutely intelligent. Well, maybe not. Now that since this story, we've learned about the parents with a lot of money who give money to colleges to get their parents or their kids in. So maybe his parents did that for him, because he certainly grew up in privilege, and he went to Yale. He was part of the Delta Kappa Epsilon fraternity. Then after graduating undergrad Yale, he went on to Yale Law School. And then that obviously began his career, first as a law clerk and then a postgraduate fellow working under Judge Ken Starr. So there you go. And you know the rest. He just moves up and up and up the ranks, and until obviously President Trump has now nominated him. So he looks like a great guy on paper. I mean, his resume is amazing. He's when people were asked what he was like in high school, a lot of people remember him as his Yale classmates remember him as being a serious but not too showy student who loves sports, especially basketball. And so overall, he looks like a really clean cut. He attended Georgetown Preparatory School, a Jesuit boys' college prep school, where he was 2 years ahead of Neil Gorsuch, with whom he would later clerk at the Supreme Court and eventually serve with him as Supreme Court Justice. So he was a captain of the basketball team, wide receiver, quarterback on the football team. I mean, the list just goes on. You get what I'm talking about. I think you can picture what Brett Kavanaugh was like. And turns out he sexually assaulted a former classmate in high school. And she came out as he was being nominated, because she saw that he was really getting high up there. And I think she realized, wait a minute, I better say something before this guy goes and becomes, you know, he's really becomes even bigger than he already has become. So Ford, Christine, her name was Christine Blasey Ford, and she came out in early 2018. And she talked about what happened and how he in high school tried to force himself on her, and she was physically restrained. And so she was about 15 and he was 17 is what she said. This was in the early 80s. And they were at a house party at a bedroom in Maryland, and he corralled a couple friends, turned up the music in the room, and pinned her to the bed, started groping her, and then tried to pull her clothes off. And then he covered her mouth with his hand when she tried to scream. So I don't know. I don't know if you guys have ever been in a situation even remotely like that. But for me, growing up in the 80s, 90s in San Francisco, like I said, this kind of thing happened often. And it happened to me, and it happened to many of my friends. So even, I think it just doesn't matter whether where you grow up or what kind of, you know, this mentality that gets started. And a lot of times it gets started in situations where, you know, especially young men with a lot of testosterone get put together, whether it's a sports team or a fraternity, and they put a little alcohol again with that. And then the girls play into it too in a lot of ways. And so here we have a recipe for disaster. So In looking at this a little further over the past several days, I realized that I always thought it was my fault, and it was my, you know, I was probably one of the only people, other than the few friends I knew of at the time that had happened to. But as I grew older, like I said, and I became more interested in psychology and talking about people's experience, I learned that this is quite common, and many, many friends have experienced this. So my experience, although it was a long time ago, although at that time we wouldn't ever get on the radio and talk about this as a college student, nor would I talk about any of this. But I felt compelled because, A, it's my birthday, and not that I want my birthday to be wrapped around this topic, but I do want to celebrate that I have matured and I now can stand up for myself and for other women, and encourage other women to do the same, and be, you know, and to just let other people know what my experience was. Even young men that may not do that unless put in that situation. So I thought I was one of the few, but then I actually learned, in fact, I was one of many. So in 1992, a big part of the culture was rap music, which I loved, I have to admit. I mean, I was a huge fan of Too Short and NWA, and I remember reciting those songs, and they're kind of burned into my cranial memory. And as I listen to the songs today, I love the beat, and I love, because it's part of my past, but I listen to the words and I'm like going, oh my God, we used to sing those songs as we were at parties with boys. And they were really explicit lyrics, you know, very degrading to women, but I just didn't look at it like that at that age. So at this age, and I look back, I do look at it like we were victims of sexual abuse, and it was just a lot of that rape mentality, not just in college campuses now, but back then, you know, that just never got talked about. So anyway, the point of my show here today is just really to spread awareness and talk about what women go through, you know, and men. Men are not immune to. They are also, you know, when there's things like hazing and drinking too much alcohol, there's a lot of scary things that can happen. So many college women, in fact, say their experiences often are date rape situations. So it just shows, it illustrates a culture of indifference and denial, you know, because a lot of times, because you think you knew the person or you were on the date, and so that couldn't have been really what it was, because sometimes it's subtle, that 1 in 5 young women are insulted during their college years. That's pretty huge if you think about it. That's a big, those are big numbers. And so I want to encourage everybody. I'm going to take a break here. I want to play a really awesome song by Coldplay that talks about, it's called Talk, and it's a great song, one of my favorites. It talks about just talking, getting things out. And that's what my show's about. That's what this episode's about. I really want to encourage people to talk about things that we need help with, things that are hurting us, and things that need to be uncovered. So here it is. Enjoy Coldplay. This is Talk.
You can call the rider up to the sun.
And that was Coldplay, Talk. What a great song. I love how they're, yeah, let's just talk. These are things that need to get out. There's one verse in the song that says, do you feel like a puzzle? You can't find your missing piece. And I love that. That's a song I go to when I need a little bit of like pumping up, because I think so often we feel like that growing up, whether you've been a victim of sexual assault or not, which is what we're talking about a little bit tonight. You already feel like that as a human being. So can you imagine being violated as a college, a young woman or young man, as a college kid? You know, it's just, it's hard. And so I've never forgiven myself for being a victim of sexual abuse. And I really, I've gone through life blaming myself for all the things I didn't do at 18, 19, 20. Like, so to make a long story short, I graduated from high school by the skin of my teeth. I went to great schools, all like fantastic schools. I went to four high schools, although from kindergarten through eighth grade or freshman year, I went to one same school, a Catholic girls' school. And then I went away to a boarding school. And they just, we just had a mutual, we just didn't agree upon rules, you know? So I came back, and by the time that would be my fourth school, I came back, I went to a small private school, and then that didn't work out. So then I went to a public school. So I was all over the place, to say the least, but, and I never forgave myself for that. And I look back now and I thought, I'm thinking, well, how could I have been successful and done all of what I did? And then at that early age, well, things like this were happening around me left and right. So I certainly, you know, but I did go through life thinking, did I really deserve it? Because I really put myself in unsafe situations by being at that house party or in that situation where people were drinking alcohol. And let's be real, like that happens not just for me all those years ago, but it's happening every single day. I'm doing a lot of research. I'm a psych major and I'm working on my thesis, and this is really powerful for me, because I can certainly say that I was a victim of this sexual assault. And now I've, you know, a lot of legal scholars and activists and even feminist alliances are calling it rape culture, you know, because it's a way that this kind of stuff has happened and it's been overlooked by people. And rape culture on campuses is a form of sexual discrimination, because it certainly just deprives us as women to have equal accesses to education and be able to do the things that men can do, certainly. And I guess it is often a feeling of being a minority, feeling discriminated, feeling as though, had I been a boy, if I had been a man, they wouldn't have said that to me. And I feel that as I got older, I started feeling that a little bit more. Like, wait a minute, you know, that's not okay. And then I started my own business, and I've been running my own business for many years before I went back to school. And as I'm doing this, I experienced it more and more and more, even the things that I had experienced when I was younger by being treated a certain way in the workplace. Now, it wasn't at school, it wasn't at the house party, it wasn't at the college, you know, it wasn't wherever, it wasn't on the baseball field or the whatever, it was at work. And it happened daily, and it happened so much to me. And then speaking for many, many, many of my friends, almost I would actually go so far to say every single one of my really good female friends has experienced some sort of being a victim of sexual assault. And you know, when I'm talking about sexual assault, I'm not just talking about like rape. Because when we think of that, we have this idea, whatever that means for you, what being sexually assaulted is. But as I've gotten older and I've been around a lot of different experiences and people, and I've done a lot of research on the topic, oftentimes being a victim of sexual assault can be very sneaky. And you don't even know it's happening. Or you know, it might not feel right to you, but you also, the person doing it to you is a predator. They're in some ways, a person that's going to do something like that is manipulative, and they take advantage of your, whether it's your naive or your vulnerability or whatever, your whatever, you know. So oftentimes we don't, it's not that blatant. It's not that, you know, for instance, there was a case not too long ago, a young man named Brock Turner. Hopefully everybody knows of him. He was quite a guy. He was amazing. So bright, apparently. He was a 22-year-old. He was a student at Stanford University. Very, very impressive. He was a swimmer. And so, you know, just a really great guy. He had a great resume, and you know, Brock Turner was quite a guy. Everybody thought he was kind of a hero. And I think it, from what I'm guessing, he got, you know, he came from like a privileged, entitled background. And he was probably, I'm guessing, like if a girl said no to him, I'm sure girls said no to him all the time, because if you just look at his picture, you'd see, and you know what I mean. But I think maybe he was rejected so much that he turned around and decided to be aggressive, you know, and I've experienced that with men before. So that's my guess. But yeah, so Brock Turner, he decided that it would be a good idea to he was 22, and he took a girl home. I guess they walked home, and basically he sexually assaulted her behind a dumpster. And she was unconscious. That's the part that's really a kicker. She had been drinking alcohol. They both were drinking, and she was completely unconscious. And so he took that opportunity to get what I guess women really don't want to give to a guy like Brock Turner. So my guess is that he's been rejected, and so he took that. So thank God, two graduate students were going by, and they happened to see him on top of her behind a dumpster, and they held him. They screamed, and he went running off. One of them called the ER, and the other one, or the paramedics, and the other one got the guy down, and they pinned him down. And he was smiling when they turned him over. And when asked later, he said, oh, well, he thought it was ridiculous that he was being, I guess, interrupted or something. So, yeah, thank God for those unbelievable people, those heroes that stopped, the Good Samaritans that stopped and did something. And that's also an interesting thing I'm studying right now about the power of the situation. And, you know, would you be, if you are put in a situation like that, you see somebody in need, would you stop and help them? Or would you just walk away and you know, maybe somebody else will help them? So this is a perfect example of two wonderful people that jump in there, and were able to save her, but not without already being sexually assaulted, because she was a victim. So that's just, that kind of story happens all the time. That one just happened to make the news because he had such a light sentence. It was ridiculous. I think he was on probation, a little probation. He was in jail for like 6 months, but he served only 3 for, I don't know, I'm guessing his parents probably paid off. But yeah, crazy. And the father, this was the part that, this is so funny because I'm like, oh, this apple doesn't fall far from the tree. His father was really offended that Brock had been, you know, he thought, well, my God, I think his quote was something like this, just roughly, I'm quoting him. He said that, you know, just for a couple, 20 seconds of activity or of action, you know, that's quite a steep penalty. That's a steep price to pay for 20 seconds of action. That was his response to his son's, yeah. So anyway, I want to bring this out. It's a big, big topic we need to bring to the forefront and talk about, because oftentimes, not only if somebody doesn't say something, which is usually the case, it goes unreported or Maybe you might tell a friend or two, maybe, but generally, a lot, most times, it doesn't go reported. So then when it does, or it's often where the person is then turned, the victim is then turned into the, you know, she's the one that's in trouble. And people often say that they've found that there's a lack of concern, empathy, and desire. And they certainly want to protect the institution, right? Especially these institutions we're talking about, Yale, Stanford, Georgetown Preparatory Jesuit School for Boys. And I can even name off several schools that I, in my own experience, that had many, many students go through their school and come out like that. And then here's one other thing. I was doing more research and saw apparently when they do fraternity pledges, and here's an example of Yale having a fraternity pledge, like when they want you to haze, and they take the men go outside the sexual, they fraternity pledges at Yale proclaim to their rights to sexual domination outside the women's dormitory, chanting, "No means yes, and yes means anal." I just want to take a second to let that sink in for a second. No means yes, and yes means anal. So if you are a male or you have a son, or please, let's be real and let's teach everybody that no means no. And that just made my heart drop, because I remember that kind of behavior. I remember feeling that. I remember hearing those things and thinking, well, it's just how boys are. It's how boys are. Boys can be like that. And no, it's not how boys are, and it's not how boys should be. And I have two beautiful sons that I've raised to be respectful. And that's what I want to just make everybody aware that, please, let's take care of each other. Let's be kind. And let's not hurt each other, because, like I said, these things stick with you forever. And even though we put them aside, we do feel pain throughout our lives. With that, I'm going to take another break and give you guys a chance to hear some really great music. I wanted to go back a little further into time in my life. I graduated from high school, like I said, and moved straight up to Seattle, Washington, during the grunge time, when it was like Pearl Jam was just getting started, and Nirvana and Kurt Cobain he was just a, you know, this was before any of that. So they weren't even popular. In fact, we used to go to like this little underground I think it was like a nightclub or a cafe. Everything was a cafe called the OK Corral under the viaduct in Seattle. And this was like in 1992. And we would hear Eddie Vedder, and he was not even popular, and he'd be playing there. So this is one of my songs. It's a song I listen to kind of just makes me feel a lot. And you can decide how it makes you feel after you listen to it.
Yes, I understand that every life must end, as we sit alone, I know someday we must go. Oh, I'm a lucky man to count on both hands the ones I love. Some folks just have one, yeah, others they got none. Stay with me. Just breathe.
There's so much in this world to make me believe. Stay with me, you're all I see. Did I say that I need you? Did I say that I want you? Or if I did, now I'm fooling you, see. I look upon your face, oh, oh. Everything you gave and nothing you would take, oh, oh. Nothing you would take, everything you gave.
And that was Just Breathe by Pearl Jam. They actually came out with that song Halloween, October 31st, 2009. So, yeah, just love Eddie Vedder's voice. I love listening to that. If I'm feeling, you know, a little bit emotional, I take that and I put it in my car and I go for a drive sometimes. But, yep, if you're just joining, you are listening to Happy Hour with DJ Gen X, and we are at Penguin Radio 102.3, or you can go to radio.dominican.edu and just stream live. We actually are doing shows. Everybody's still recording. We're in the midst of a pandemic right now. There's the coronavirus outbreak, as everybody knows. And so rather than doing live shows at the studio, we are now, all the DJs are recording great shows from home. So that's what I'm doing. I'm recording. Today happens to be my birthday, so I'm lucky enough to get an opportunity to celebrate with all my listeners. So thank you for joining me. And if you're, I was talking about, as I've been in this, we've been sheltering in place, I've been digging through some old boxes in my garage, and I've really stirred up a lot of emotions with some of the things I found, which are all, you know, such treasures, and it's really great. But I did find journals of my, you know, that I'd written as a young girl, a teenager, and in my 20s, a lot of stories and a lot of feelings that I had that I wrote down. I forgot I even wrote these things down. So you can only imagine when I opened up and I started reading, I was like, oh my God, who is this girl? Who is this girl? And it's me. And a lot of what I wrote was just a lot about what I had experienced in a few different situations. I didn't know what I didn't know. So I kept a lot of this stuff to myself, and I wrote it obviously in a journal. And as I got older and I felt more comfortable, I started to share with other female friends that I made as adult, and we started to, I was shocked. I realized that so many of my friends, and I can just speak for my friends that I know of, but so many females and that just so many are victims of sexual abuse. And so I felt that it was really important that I take this opportunity to just say something about that and honor the young girl in me that couldn't come out and say anything, partly because I felt that maybe I deserved it because of the situation I was in, whether it be a party or, that there was alcohol being served. But really, the truth is that I never deserved that. And no girl or boy or male or female, nobody deserves that. And it's something that really does stick with a person forever, but you learn to cope with it. You I've done a lot of therapy, and I think that's probably partly a lot of the reason why I've decided to go back to school and become a therapist, because I have a lot to offer, and I have a lot of empathy for people that have experienced stuff like that. So thank you. I really just felt inclined to talk about that. So I'm going to just move on here and talk to you really quickly before I end my show and play a good jam. I wanted to talk about what it's like to celebrate my birthday during a pandemic, because this is a first for me. I think it's going to be a first, obviously, for everybody. I don't know how long we're going to be in this, but anybody that's celebrating this year, lucky enough to be celebrating a birthday, is probably going to be experiencing this. It's interesting. I went to the grocery store and I wore my mask and gloves. I obviously haven't been able to see all of my friends like I normally do, but people have been so kind and calling me and trying to FaceTime me. And I've got a Zoom call, in fact, with some friends for my birthday. So that's how it is this year. It's just different. Another one of those things that we need to get used to, because this might go on for a bit. And you know, I woke up this morning feeling a little bit down. I was kind of feeling sorry for myself, because birthdays for me have always been such a big deal. I literally start celebrating the 1st of April all the way to the very end. And I start to taper down after the 19th. You know, it kind of slows down a little bit, but it starts out really strong in the beginning of April. I mean, just it's the whole month. So this has been really interesting for me. And today just feels like any other day. So with that, I want to play one last jam that I just really means so much to me. And when I'm thinking about all these memories and being nostalgic, I have to come back to, good old Oingo Boingo. They are a band from, it was started by Danny Elfman in 1979. He was an amazing songwriter, producer, huge in the music business. And, this was the first concert I ever went to, and I think 1987. It was at the Concord Pavilion, and that was it. First concert I went to, and I never stopped going. I love concerts so much. And there's a part of this song talks about it's called "We Close Our Eyes," but he says we close our eyes and the world turns around again. We close our eyes and another year has come and gone, and that's stuck. That's always stuck with me, even at that concert that I went to in 1987, I remember feeling kind of sad when he said that, but in a, you know, a nostalgic kind of way, even at that age. So enjoy, everybody. And I will catch you next week for Happy Hour Wednesdays. Thanks for celebrating my birthday with me.
Everybody is running. that's a wrap. See you next week.